Previously.tv Podcast Network.
People over 40 shouldn't be gushy. It's not cute.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 146 for the week of February 20th, 2017. I am student drop-off zone David T. Cole, and I'm here with mint-flavored organic blowjob Sarah D. Bunting.
Now my day.
PayPal board member Tara Ariana.
Like I need one more thing, right?
And artfully concealed bruise Eve Beatty.
I operate my one-man web design shop from a standing desk in the kitchen of my multi-million dollar mansion.
Wow. Before we get into it, guys, I just have a little bit of site business. We are off next week because Tara is going to be at the happiest place on earth.
We'll see.
East Coast?
Yes.
With every female member of her family.
Correct.
Old, young, and in between.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's Tara? Try to guess. I think you'll have fun. In lieu of a full slate, we are going to do minis, right? So there'll still be minis next week.
There will still be minis next week,
but
yes.
No big juicy podcast. And another piece of site business. Thanks to VP for your gifts. Very unexpected, unnecessary, but very much appreciated.
Yes.
I will be buying something super stupid. Don't you worry about it. And with that, off on to you, Tar.
Yeah, I will definitely not be using it to buy self-sealing envelopes. Even though we do need them, I will spend my own money on them. Welcome back, Eve Beatty.
Welcome back, Eve.
Thank you so much for having me. I know, I always wait,
always
and then I always get it wrong.
Eve is here because she is covering Big Little Lies for us, the new HBO limited series, which premiered on Sunday, and that is our topic today. Eve, you went into it, as I said in your new show fact sheet, not expecting to like it, but you really did. Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't. I don't know. So HBO dropped every screener except the finale. I've not read the book, but I have watched every episode. So I've watched all six episodes except the last one. How about you guys? How far are you along?
I've only watched the first.
Okay, well,
I am five in because I was like you. I had no interest. I was only going to watch it because we were covering it. I read your new show fact sheet and I was like, and now I'm kind of obsessed with it. But
right.
Awesome.
Well, enough about me. Why is it that you tell us about why you thought it would not be great and why it is great?
Because I really did think that it was going to be. Well, I think for one thing is that since I was aware that Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman were the producers behind it, I assumed, and I was wrong, that meant that they were going to be managing their images in a way that did not allow them to be ugly. And by ugly, I don't mean how they look, because these are beautiful women. You know, everyone on the show in its entirety is beautiful. Everything is great to look at. But I thought that it would be sort of a glossy, blow-dried, superficial sort of just like Desperate Housewives. I thought it would be like Desperate Housewives. Mm-hmm. And instead it's so dark and it's so dirty. And especially Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman and Laura Dern are so good in it that there's this moment, I think in the first episode, where all of a sudden I realize Reese Witherspoon is going to be so dislikable and so likable at the same time, which you never get to see, but it is how so many women actually are. And I was in sort of at that moment.
Yeah. The clarity with which all of those three characters are drawn is really remarkable and I think drives the show. Sarah, what was it that made you have to start mowing through them so quickly?
It really was the complexity that Eve referred to both just now and in her new show fact sheet, that everyone that you're spending any significant amount of time with is kind of a like privileged monster, but also, and like not for nothing, but first of all, the kid who plays Ziggy, Jane's son, who may or may not be at the center of the controversy driving the whole season so far. His name is Ian Armitage, and he had a small role on a recent SVU and was like just such a refreshingly real kid. And when the kid actors are like decent, that's always refreshing that you're not like, oh, here we go with the kid.
Yeah.
But oh my God, also... his Armitage.
Dave's one contribution to the conversation. Proceed, Sarah.
Great. But they, and there is a lot of that, and there is a lot of like eye rolling. But first of all, the writing knows how to not make everything a total caricature. Like that interviewees that are in the little interstitial interview room parts, like that's a little much. And what a waste, P.S., of David Monahan, late, very late of Dawson's Creek, as Toby, Jack's boyfriend, who put a whole snowball in his mouth at the prom, one of my favorite moments of that show ever. Like, put it, like, give him something to do, make him the barista, the sort of in and out, something, because he's cute and fun. But there was that, like, you know, Maddie, played by my birthday mate, Reese Witherspoon, has these moments of, like, she's extremely brittle, but she's also brittle in this relatably petty way that I was like, yeah, I guess she's hateful, but she's hateful in an exact, in the exact way that I am hateful. So she's relateful. I don't know if that's a word. Now it is. Yeah. But there is something about it, like, aside from the fact that the script, and maybe this is from the book, feels obligated to mention how beautiful Nicole Kidman's character is, like, every half hour, you know, just casually, like, men, male characters, female characters, cops. I don't know if that was in her contract, and given the wig situation, not 100.
The Mary Tyler Moore wig?
I mean, she does look great. Her body is, you know, better than mine was when I was 25. Good for her. But it's a little much. Like, that's not a character beat that she's pretty. But there is something that I find irresistible about, like, feuds in privileged communities like this. Because I was raised in, like, a less hippie, you know, 70s and 80s version, but, like, kind of a Monterey of New Jersey. And, like, this kind of thing, like, looking at the strata of mom society and the, you know, leaning in versus staying at home issues and stuff like that. Like, there's something that's really fascinating to me about it on a gossipy level, even if it's fiction.
You know, so if that's in New Jersey, I think it actually could be just a guy named Monterey.
Yeah. And his cousin, Johnny Two Times. Gonna drive the carpool, Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, for me, I look forward to watching it probably, at, you know, as it airs, but it, because it replaces, for me, my late lamented one season wonder, The Slap, on NBC, because, you know, as you sort of hinted before, there the plot, of, at least the premiere, revolves around the Ziggy possibly, maybe not, choking another girl in his class, the daughter of the Laura Dern character. And I love to, like, the portrayal of this school that's like the public school, but it's the perfect public school that everyone moves to the district so that they can go there, but, and it's run like a private school, clearly, that the teacher, after like the first half day of first grade, has to gather all the parents and all the kids, and all the parents have taken off work for this bullshit too, by the way, and they all have to gather around, and like, obviously the idea is, if we'll just do this, like, have the accusation out in the open and it'll all be transparent and it'll be great, not thinking like, oh, this is immediately going to turn into a witch hunt. Like, clearly the teacher realizing halfway through this confrontation, oh, this was a bad way to handle this, but now I'm committed and we have to go through with it. I mean, that aspect of it is fascinating. As someone who watched, God, now I forget what the name of that terrible parenting show was on Broadway. The Extreme Guide to Parenting, I think. The one that started with the diaper-free broad. It scratches that itch for me too. So that it's a, you know, as someone who likes to judge parents, fictional and otherwise, not you, if I know you personally, listener, this is also intriguing to me on that level as well. So I was very satisfied by the first hour for sure. What can we look forward to? Maybe give us some hints.
Oh. Well, you can look forward to a lot of men behaving monstrously.
Oh.
So you're gonna enjoy that.
Not, you know, bearded Adam Scott, surely.
You know what? I will say this, that Adam Scott, who I've always been like, you know, Adam Scott's fine. I liked him in Step Brothers, whatever. Adam Scott has a moment in the second episode that made me a full-on fan. And that's one of those things that he needs to put in his reel for the rest of his life. He has such a moment where I realized all of a sudden, you know what? Adam Scott might actually be an actor. And I think I always thought of him as like the poor man's Paul Rudd. So that was like a big moment for me. Mm-hmm. But I don't, well, I don't know. Who knows what happens in the finale? Because we don't know. And like I said, I haven't read the book. Like, it's so hard to like, you know, when I want to do like a little bit of research on the book and the story and everything, to sort of like have my eyes sort of go soft on the Wikipedia page so I could get the author's name and not see anything else. But every single guy on the show, even possibly including Ziggy, you know, does something super assy at some point in the near future, but it all is once again believable. And, you know, I mentioned this in my new show fact sheet, and I'll mention it again. Alex Skarsgård is one of those people that I think has always sort of posed a puzzle for people who want to cast stuff. I mean, he maybe as Tarzan seemed like a good idea, but I don't think that it worked out. Well, I mean, he's tall, whatever.
Sure.
You know, but I think everyone's been trying to figure out what to do with this guy since True Blood, because people loved his character on True Blood so much. And this is the first time I've seen him used where it actually works again, and it takes advantage of his skills and it works with his weaknesses. So I think that if I'm going to predict anything about the future, I think that this show is going to be sort of the resurgence for young Mr. Skarsgård too.
Sarah, what do you most want us? What are you most looking forward to us seeing in the episodes to come?
Well, I think it does a really good job of sort of implying the chasm between surface and reality, or like appearances and like emotional reality, and not crossing over the line too much. And also that the sound design is excellent, and I like how it gives this like 70s like Laurel Canyon-y kind of vibe.
The lighting
to the
did that
on.
For me too.
Yeah, even though it's happening in the present day, and just the inference that the viewer then makes about you know, everyone's background and upbringing sort of reflecting forward, and that choices made years ago all kind of converge here in the story that we're watching in a way that could have been, they could have underlined it really hard, but they didn't. It is beautiful to look at. It's beautiful to listen to. No bad performances, but I think that, you know, a story like this is like, it's got to be really tough to like explore the issues, capital I, that you want to explore without being too heavy-handed about what it all means for women and feminism and parenting and having it all and all that stuff. And, you know, as a childless person myself, it's sort of like, this can be incredibly awkward to watch, just like knowing parents and having had a parent. And yeah. I can't imagine what it's like for like certain parents in the audience might be watching it through interlaced fingers. Certainly, you know, there are going to be some segments of the Brooklyn audience that are gonna find it a little uncomfortable, like just the sort of running teeny little gag about how people keep calling Renata's daughter Annabella and then correcting themselves and then doing a teeny little eye roll because her name's actually Amabella, like but yeah, I really admire the performances from all four of the leads. There's no vanity to them at all, and even Shailene the unfeminist Woodley is pretty much punching her weight with these the big kids. So yeah, it's really good. And I'm like dying. I was sort of like alternating watching screeners of this and watching screeners of The Missing. And both of these have this way of like, here's another piece. And you thought you knew this, but actually it's that. And it's a similar like slow build. And I'm very disappointed that eventually I'm going to have to stop watching screeners and wait until like April for the finale, but it's good. Oh, yeah. I recommend it.
Dave, your final thoughts? This is obviously a show with you in mind as viewer.
Well, we haven't mentioned that it's a David E. Kelly.
No, we didn't. Thing. That's a good point.
And it really kind of, if in your mind's eye, you can strip away the, you know, A-listers and the great production values, you're like, oh yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. That's a David E. Kelly show. But they dress it up well. I can totally get why people like it. It's just I don't give a shit about those kind of people.
Yeah, this is not a Dave show.
Our friend Sarah's in it.
Oh, yeah. Our friend Sarah Baker is one of the Greek chorus talking head people that we see briefly in interviews. Yeah. The other touchstone that it reminded me of in a good way, other than the slap, was togetherness. And for the reasons that Sarah sort of said, that, you know, the way it very subtly shows how people can hurt each other in like the tiniest ways, I think is well done and well handled. So yeah, I'm excited to keep watching it. Good show.
Coming soon, a podcast story of epic proportions. Come listen to the mystery. Who killed beloved children's show host Brushy Sunshine?
Bullets! Someone is assassinating me!
Meet the man tasked with solving the case.
The name's Dan Kent. Detective Dan Kent. I was the poor pepper who caught this case like I caught my parents making pancakes. Pancakes is what they called S-E-X.
And there's no shortage of suspects.
I wanted to marry Brushy ever so much. Our fate was written in the stars with a space pen.
Children never warmed to me like they did my brother. He'd smile and the world would smile. My smile would only make a shark fart.
Did we mention it's a musical?
Used to be my world was all at angles. Crooked. Instead of dancing, I could only stoop.
Well, it is! Sorry, I have anger issues. Happy place, happy place. Anyway, you'll hear thrills!
The prophecy is bigger than us. It can still...
Silence, you!
Chills!
You've tied me up in yarn, trussed me up like a roast. What are these vile machines?
And a plucker.
Stopper!
And the needle threader upper.
Spills! Oh, I spilled my coffee on myself. Oh, hot. Ooh, hear the high notes.
It's a dream. We make that make us you and I.
And low notes.
I still can't look a flapjack in the hotcake without getting off.
Why are you telling me this?
And spills. Ow, my soda. Ow, cold. Ooh. All right, there's also adventures.
Look once more into my magical muck water.
And puppets.
Everybody gets fussed tonight.
Also, spill my water. Warm.
James, stop spilling things!
So come take the auditory adventure!
Don't forget to ask for the special sauce!
A musical proportion!
When your mouth buddies, you never get left behind!
The Fall of the House of Sunshine! Coming soon! Only on the internet!
Special sauce! Special sauce!
If you would like to know more about the Fall of the House of Sunshine, go to podmusical.com or check the show notes on our webpage or on your very own podcasting app. Yeah, Tiny Triumphs are back. Eve's got one. What do you got, Eve?
Yeah, so it was the third week of November when the very same group of people you're listening to right now responded to a mini topic proposed by a Twitter user, Jocelyn M. She asked us which shows should jump forward 3 seasons. Dave basically just went for the joke. Tara opted for a jump back to save Blackish viewers from the twins. And Sarah had something I did not quite completely understand about The Sopranos in a Paranormal Activity sort of way. I, however, suggested that the show Jane the Virgin leap forward 3 years. And I was right. They did it. They did it, you guys. They did it. Now, am I suggesting that the people who work on Jane the Virgin were listening to the podcast and thought, well, what a great idea. We're going to do it. No, of course not. I think that it's clear that the show is really well mapped out and they had this figured out quite some time ago. I will, however, argue that if any Jane the Virgin staffers are listening right now, this means, A, that my advice is really good, and B, I get how your show works. So when I fill in for Tara next week,
yes,
and report on that Monday's episode, you guys who work on Jane the Virgin will be very wise to take any remarks I make very, very seriously. Thank you.
It's almost time for Around the Dial, but first, we have a message inspired by Jen.
Jen may not have been through the TV Police Academy, but she is certainly empowered to make TV citizens' arrests, and she's deep into an investigation into TV wardrobe offenses. Specifically, she's deputized herself
Coat Cop.
Now that we're well into winter, Jen has observed that there's a class of shows set in the Northeast, Boston, Pennsylvania, and New York, but which force the audience to notice they're all actually filmed in Los Angeles by sending characters out into the alleged cold without coats.
Of course, this is not a problem with, say, SVU, which actually shoots in New York and lets you see the actor's breath to prove it. But come on now, quote-unquote, Capeside, Massachusetts on Dawson's Creek. Either make sure the background actors aren't wearing spaghetti-strapped tank tops outside in February, or just move the damn show to North Carolina already.
The middle is set in Indiana, and usually those characters get stuffed into frumpy outerwear, but why was Brick walking around a drugstore a couple of episodes back with his coat wide open and without a trace of anything remotely snow-like on his shoes? Indiana gets cold!
Jen, you are absolutely right to call out coat offenses on TV when they occur, which, unfortunately, is likely to be for the rest of this month and most of the next. So we're making you an official deputy TV cop on the Outerwear Crimes Task Force.
And how convenient that this honor should coincide with your birthday. So from all of us and Alon, happy birthday, Jen!
A.K.A. Coat Cop.
I mean,
Coat Cop?
Coat Cop.
Yeah, here you go. It is time to go around the dial, and against all good sense, Tara Ariano is first. Can she recover from her infamous coat cop? Fluff.
We'll see. I will just briefly talk about The Good Fight, the spinoff of The Good Wife. We have more about it in Winners and Losers. We'll let you know which category it falls into.
Want to take a moment?
Later on. No, I'm fine.
Deep breath.
This is... It premiered on CBS All Access on Sunday, also on regular ass CBS at 8 p.m. They had two back to back, but only one of which was available on
same
All
channel,
Access.
Same old S.
No, ass, not S.
Oh, they said S.
Regular ass CBS.
They
anyway,
said regular S, which is very funny to me.
Adam Grossberg is going to be covering it, at least for the time being, on previously.tv until such time as it starts really conflicting with Once Upon a Time, which also airs on Sundays. But as he said in his new show fact sheet about it, this is The Good Wife minus Alicia. I'm here for that. Like she had as he said in his new show fact sheet, she was like by the end definitely the worst part of that show, and maybe quite a bit before the end, by the way. So focusing on Diane at the center of this is obviously a win for everyone, the viewer and Diane and all of the characters on the show, honestly. There's sort of a Alicia-ish figure in the character of the Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones figure, Maya Rindell, who's the daughter of this guy who's just been arrested for a Ponzi scheme. So she's sort of the brand new bar passing lawyer who's coming fresh to all of this. And, you know, she's fine so far. She hasn't gotten that much to do. Adam pointed out that her accent comes and goes, and boy, does it ever. That is true. but the idea of having Diane have to sort of start her life over, Alicia style, also is interesting. And Christine Baranski is a delight no matter what she does. And I'm happy to have her back with Kurt, played by Gary Cole, even if it seems like they're getting divorced. Or are they? ? I think I was the only person who at the end of The Good Wife thought, just because the student said that they slept together didn't necessarily mean they did, but apparently they did. So I have to give up on that illusion. But anyway, I like it. I will keep watching it. I will figure out how to get CBS All Access and hope that there's an Apple TV app to make it easy to watch. You guys watched it too, I think, Sarah and Eve?
Yes.
I think CBS hates women because otherwise they would have put this on regular TV. I understand they wanted to drive people to online, but I don't know. Maybe I should talk about this later in the other section, but I feel like it's a deeply misogynistic decision to cut us off from the show, whether it's good or bad.
Also, Star Trek, you're against nerds.
Sarah?
Yeah, Alicia had been a problem for me since like season 3 of The Good Wife, that I was like, can't they just rename it The Good and kick her off and whatever.
And
so now problem solved. Also more swears and Cuss Jumbo's dress sourcing is the best. And I just, you know, I liked Marissa as well. Like it's all the characters that I really liked and almost no one that I don't. And so win-win, I just, you know, we'll get into CBS All Access later in the program, but the show I think is good because it's the same show. And if you were watching it because you thought it was a well-done legal procedural with maybe somewhat heavy-handed classical music cues in it, this is that. There's just someone says fuck every now and then, which
Well, the other interesting thing is that in leaving her firm because she's lost all her money in this Ponzi scheme, she goes to a primarily African-American firm where they the joke is that she's the diversity hire. But it also lets the show address some of what The Good Wife did sporadically, you know, more head on in terms of racial issues and actually making those kinds of matters that would come up in a city like Chicago more central. And in the second episode, the one that was only on CBS All Access, there's a moment where several of the lawyers from this new firm are having a sort of office hours for members of a union. And there's a moment where Luca, who's one of, as Sarah said, one of the characters that's come back from The Good Wife, notices that more of them are lined up for the brand new girls table because she's the only white lawyer there. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they continue to deal with that. And Delroy Lindo is also one of the partners at
the
firm.
Yes, I was just going
to
mention.
You were
like,
so
I would get into The Good Wife, but there's not enough Delroy Lindo. Problem fucking solved.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, and what's her name from Justified? I was so happy to see her. So happy that I can't remember her name.
Erica Tazel or Tazel, who played Rachel on Justified. Yeah, she had more to do in these two episodes than I think she did in 6 or 7 seasons of Justified. So
At a certain point, her role on Justified was so thankless because it was just like, oh, Raylan, you bad. So it was great to see her actually like wearing a super cute jacket with like awesome hair, like spitting fire.
Yeah, being very dubious about Diane. All of that is good. So yes to The Good Fight. I'm definitely in. And for my plugs, I'm going to mention, since we're off next week, Catfish returns for season 6 on Wednesday, March 1st. Please note, it is in a new time slot. It is now at 8 p.m. on MTV. I watched the screener for the first episode. I slack-IM'd Sarah. You're not going to believe this, but this episode is so convoluted.
I was actually laughing at your recent tweet about how your first concern about it changing time slots is that it wouldn't be as, like, dirty or bad. It would be like more appropriate for kids. I was like,
No,
but it was also totally my first concern.
It's still very scandalous, although the first episode, without giving anything away, is it doesn't have a lot of sexy content, but the fact that they are still finding these people that are having these tech problems is remarkable until you get the specifics on this lady's issues, because she doesn't have a computer or a smartphone, and she's been like sexting this guy with like an old Nokia Classic. I swear to no kidding.
IT9, love you.
Spoiler alert. So make sure you tune in for that next Wednesday, March 1st. And I'm also going to give a sub plug to at Tara Ariano on Instagram, because as previously mentioned, I'm going to Disney World with my two adorable nieces who've both been on the show in the past, my sister who was recently a guest, and my mom. So there's going to be some very cute Disney pictures you are not going to want to miss.
You access CBS Access, as it were, all access through the CBS app, according to in the internet.
Oh, all right.
There you go. You have it. You have the power.
All right. I just have to pay for it. Okay.
Eve.
I'm a big fan of home flipping shows because they're basically the only thing that I can hate watch anymore without feeling bad for myself or thinking, oh, but someone created this. My longtime favorite was Flip or Flop, the show with the now divorcing couple with the conspicuous consumption signaling rims on their SUV and an appalling distaste for homes that are occupied by renters. But as I grew more uncomfortable with the news coverage of the gun charges against the male half of that couple, as well as the mounting allegations that the quote-unquote educational events the couple lent their name to were a scam, I started to seek alternatives. But the other flipping shows that are out there are more poorly done and even stagier than Flip or Flop, and I was so sad until I found First Time Flippers. a show on DIY that's all about people like me who watch home flipping shows, but unlike me, they think it sounds super ethical and fun and easy to do. This show, you guys, is so great, not just because you get to watch arrogant incompetence fail, but because the participants, there's a new couple every week. They do demo with like no eye protection and then flip-flops. And every time they do all this dangerous shit, pop-up dialogue appears on the screen mocking them along the lines of like, that's a support beam, don't cut it. DIY frequently marathons this show. So if you like, you know, set your DVR for it today, you'll likely have a slew of new episodes. They're only half an hour each to churn through this weekend. And each one of them is going to feature a different set of first-time flippers that will be discovering foundation issues. They'll be frantically trying to cover up black mold with paint, nearly slicing off their hands, bickering, and maybe even getting divorced. I really strongly suggest that everyone give it a shot. You will not regret it.
All right.
Yeah. So Sarah, what about you? Oh, wait. First I have to plug a bunch of things. I want to thank all the extra hot, great shoppers who have come into my store, Avenues Dry Goods in San Francisco.
Hey. Especially those
People have come in and said that they are podcast fans, and that is so exciting, A, to know that, you know, I live by people who listen to this podcast, and B, that you guys actually listen to what we talk about the podcast and come in and buy things.
And C, that my constant San Francisco bashing hasn't stopped them listening to the podcast. Good to know.
Well, it hasn't stopped me from loving you, Tara, so why would it stop them from listening, right? So I really appreciate all you guys coming in. Please come back by. We always are getting more good stuff, and I love to see you. My other plug is not a project of mine, but it's a project I'm really enjoying by my friend and longtime colleague, Rain. It's called Law and Order Jog and Dog on Instagram. It's just those words, Law and Order, Jog and Dog. She started it because she started binging SVU and really started to notice how often at the beginning of any of these Law and Orders, people are jogging with a dog before they make the horrifying discovery. So each piece on Instagram is watching the jogger with the dog coming up and finding someone. And since she works from home, she's got a new post about every day. So it's definitely worth a follow on Instagram. Awesome. Law and Order, Jog and Dog.
We'll link it in the show notes.
That sounds right. Awesome.
Sarah,
wait till she gets to the Rollins years, because that's like, she's always jogging with her dog, Franny, who is, I believe, the cutest dog on television. I'm not a crackpot.
So sweet.
I'm going to talk about Homeland, speaking of New York shows. We have dropped it from regular coverage on the site because everyone was so over it. They were under it with the lack of realism. And I get it, but I am still watching it because it is basically turning into a cartoon that should be called The Quinn Identity. The guy survived a lethal gassing last year. And then in the season finale, it was implied that Carrie basically One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nested him. But when we come back this year, he's alive.
Yeah.
And he's like running little, despite the fact that he has basically no operative control of one entire side of his body, is coming down off illegal street drugs and, you know, was almost lethally gassed to death. He's managing to take a SWAT member hostage and conduct a standoff. He physically throws a reporter down an entire flight of stairs of a brownstone. Like, I don't really understand where the show thinks it's going with this, but at the same time, I sort of admire how committed they are to just like doing fun stuff with the characters that they know people love. In another subplot entirely, it's basically Dar Adal, played by F. Murray Abraham, machinating against various people and then finding a way to passo aggresso insult them in conversation, and then they just have to kind of take it. There's no way that this would be permitted in life, but it's so enjoyable. So I just wanted to say that even though Homeland is like completely, as usual, unrealistic, I like that now they're going with the parts of the unrealism that we actually care about versus, say, the Brody kids. And here's the other thing about Quinn. He's like a genius with little kids as well. Like, this person exists. He's an assassin, and he also does story hour with, speaking of Franny, Carrie's daughter, Franny. It's very weird, but if anyone else is still watching, I will see you on the forums at previously.tv because I love that they have leaned into it this way. Speaking of leaning in, here's my plug. I know everyone's sick of Oscars coverage. So am I. But on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, we are talking about five Oscar-winning songs, two each, one that we love, one that we hate, and then a fifth entry that is like so ubiquitous, especially to people with little girl relatives, that we had to talk about it because it's beyond love and hate and just is part of the stars at this point. So that will be dropping as you're listening to this tomorrow, Thursday, the 23rd at noon. That is Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, episode 46, Oscar Winners and Losers.
Slam from Boombox Comics is a great new monthly comic that offers a deep dive into the world of roller derby. Written by friend of the show Pamela Ribbon with art by Veronica Fish, it tells the story of Jennifer Chu and Maisie Huff, who become best friends since their first day at roller derby orientation. But will their friendship survive when they get drafted by different teams?
The book is full of great characterization, beautifully expressive art, and kick-ass roller derby action. You get slammed on the track and slammed in real life. And in both cases, you have to take your hits and get back up again.
Slam is available in print and at any comic book shop or digitally available via the Comixology app. The first three issues are already available. Get them now before you're hopelessly behind. All the cool kids like me. That music means it's time for the goateed evil cousin of the canon, the No-Nack. And presenting this week's No-Nack is Eve Beatty. Take it away, Eve.
Hi there, guys. Today, I'm here to present to you for No-Nack consideration, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 5, Episode 10, which is entitled Into the Woods. I'm doing this even though Tara has already scarily tweeted that she wants to fight me. That's right. I am so passionate about the crappiness of this episode that I am possibly picking a fight with one of my editors. But it's going to be worth it. Just stick around and listen. So, I am No-Nacking the one where Riley, everyone's least favorite Buffy boyfriend, departs. Riley's departure was arguably one of the most acknowledged and transparent bits of fan service out there until the Kings frantically got rid of Kalinda's estranged husband on Season 4 of The Good Wife. According to Buffy creator Joss Whedon, this comes from an interview published in 2003, after Buffy's relationship with Angel, quote, "We said, let's give Buffy a healthy relationship, but people didn't want it." That's the end of the quote. "People, for better or worse, seem to want Buffy and Spike to get together instead, so Whedon says the decision was made to push Riley out to get Spike on in. It appears, however, that the decision was made abruptly, as other than season premiere discomfort when Buffy was briefly in Dracula's thrall, Riley and Buffy have appeared to be a completely happy couple, even when faced with the health crisis of Joyce's brain surgery. The evening of Joyce's successful, at least we thought at the time, procedure, Dawn spends the night with Xander and Anya so Buffy can Riley can hook up in peace. They do so in a candlelit room that's pretty much your college idea of grown-up sex stuff. But now, before we get to the first cloud on the horizon, as we hear on the first clip.
It's more than special. It's perfect.
I'm glad. You deserve it after everything you've been through.
Well, it's nothing compared to what my mom had to deal with.
But it was a lot. And you were incredible.
Not really. Just covering for the weepy chicken within.
Don't sell yourself short. You stayed strong throughout, Buffy. You never even cried.
No, I cried. I cried so hard I didn't think I was going to be able to stop.
Oh.
Hear that O? That's the O that begins our descent into No-Nackness. Remember that O. The next thing we see is Riley sneaking out of his and Buffy's shared bed to head into a sketchy, we know it's sketchy because there's graffiti, building. Buffy's sort of, at this point, stalker, Spike, on his heels. The next night, Spike appears in Buffy's room as she sleeps, because that's totally not rape culture at all. He leads her to an establishment that's the cheesiest bits of Crackton and Bravo combined, where she witnesses a shirtless Riley being consensually sucked off, and oh yes, the positioning of the female vampire's head is clearly intended to signal fellatio as he groans harder. Then he spies Buffy. Riley takes off after her, but she's gone, and he apparently doesn't have it in him to follow her home. The next day, Buffy heads to the magic store in an effort to figure out what she just saw her previously perfect boyfriend up to. Clearly, she didn't read all the internet forums or whatever on how Riley stunk and needed to be written off as swiftly as possible. Tells the tale.
Who would pay to get bitten?
Oh, that's been going on for centuries. Humans hire vampires to feed off them. They get off on the rush.
And the danger. The hazards of the underworld can become addictive to some people.
That's right. So Buffy's been at the slang thing for years and years, and the apparently commonplace concept of vampire massage parlors has never come up before, nor would it ever again on this or any other Buffyverse property. That's not the sign of hasty or sloppy writing, guys. It sure isn't. Nope. Yep. Speaking of crappy writing, there's this little scene where Riley storms into Spike's crib and in a pre-commercial cliffhanger appears to stake him. Can we please hear the third clip, Dave?
Ow! Bloody hell! Oh, God!
Hey. Plastic wood grain. Looks real, doesn't it? Don't think I don't know what's going on with you, Spike. Stay away from her. We'll do this for real next time.
Oh, man. You're really under it, aren't you?
What?
Look at you. I'm afraid I'm hot for your honey.
Because you are.
Well, yeah. But that's not your problem. Even if I wasn't in the picture, you're never going to be able to hold on to her. Oh, bloody hell!
Maybe I didn't almost kill you enough.
Oh, come on! You're not the long-haul guy, and you know it.
Shut up.
You know it. Or else you wouldn't be getting suck jobs from two-bit vampire trolls. A girl needs some monster in her man. And that's not in your nature. No matter how low you try to go.
Oh my God, fake wood grain, fuck you! That's so goddamn cheap. But I'm distracted by that, by the insane, completely unsupported assertions that Spike is making regarding Buffy's preferences and her inavailability to Riley. We've never seen any evidence that she was keeping herself or her affections from Riley at any point in the show, but Riley's just like, oh, I guess Spike is right. This is a disservice to the Riley character, and once again, inadequate construction in an effort to speedily shuffle him away. So Riley goes from his manly discussion of crazy lady brains with Spike to confront Buffy in her magic shop training annex. Yeah, that's right. I said Riley is confronting Buffy. She's done nothing wrong, but somehow she's the asshole. Allow Riley to explain in clip 4.
We need to have this out, Buffy. Right now.
And say what, Riley? What were you thinking? How long have you been lying to me? Nothing you say right now is gonna make this better.
I realize that. I don't expect... I just need you to hear me out.
Fine. Get your hand off of me.
I think when this thing started, it was just some stupid, immature game. I wanted to even the score after you let Dracula bite you.
I did not let Dracula.
I know. On some level, I know that. But I was still spun. I don't know. I wanted to know what you felt. I wanted to know why Dracula and Angel have so much power over you.
You so don't get it.
I wanted to get it, Buffy. I wanted to get you.
So this is my fault? Hey, gee, Buffy's so mysterious. I think I'll go out and almost die. I think I'll go and let some other...
This isn't your fault. It's mine. And I feel like hell for what I've put you through. But it's just... These girls...
Vampires. Killers.
They made me feel something, Buffy. Something I didn't even know I was missing until...
I can't hear this.
You need to hear this.
Fine. Tell me about your whores. Tell me what on earth they were giving you that I can't.
They needed me.
Did Marty Noxon, who wrote and directed this episode, consciously channel every tired-ass, unapologetic cheater and adulterer with that speech? That's right, unapologetic. Other than the, I feel like hell. At no point does Riley even suggest that he's sorry for engaging in this risky, to them all, arguably, behavior. It's Buffy's fault for being stronger than Riley, for not needing him in the way he suddenly claims he wants to be needed, or for some other ephemeral complaint that she can't really defend herself from because it's all so goddamn vague. And even worse, if she can't accept this slimy thing and he suddenly thinks that her affections for him are so inadequate, she's even more of an asshole. And guess what? He's going to go to Bolivia tonight. Bye! I want to be clear. At this point, I'm still fine with this episode. Yeah, it's infuriating, and sure, the turn with Riley was weak-ass, but I could forgive it for the sharp writing we have in the other scenes with Buffy and Joyce. And, you know, this episode also has some of my favorite Anya lines, maybe in the series. But now, we're going to get to the real poison, the true Nonax stuff. Because after Riley storms out, Buffy's confronted in the alley by the brothel vampires, and her killing of all of them, especially of the female one Buffy has spied with Riley, is played as a petulant act of rage and jealousy. Which is insane, because my God, these are vampires. None of them are, as, say, Spike presently is chipped or in any other way bound from deciding that suck work was no longer for them and that they'd go back to the killing game. Remember, these creatures do not have souls and are inhabited by malevolent demons. Just because they worked at the brothel doesn't mean they signed a no-killing contract. This is Buffy's job, and instead it's suggested that she's just being a scorned bitch. And then it gets worse, because Xander, the longtime poster boy for that incredibly toxic kind of stealth misogyny disguised as nerdery, and, fun fact, the character Joss Whedon says he most relates to, arrives to mansplain to Buffy that she's a bitch for, oh Christ, I don't even know. Dave, will you please just roll the clip? I'm going to go scream.
I lied. See what I think? You got burned with Angel, and then Riley shows up.
I know the story, Xander.
But you missed the point. You shut down, Buffy. And you've been treating Riley like the rebound guy, when he's the one that comes along once in a lifetime. He's never held back with you. He's risked everything. And you're about to let him fly because you don't like ultimatums? If he's not the guy, if what he needs from you just isn't there, let him go. Break his heart and make it a clean break. But if you really think you can love this guy, I'm talking scary, messy, no emotions barred need. If you're ready for that, then think about what you're about to lose.
So Buffy, who suddenly realizes, I guess, that Xander is a huge sarcastic quote marks go here, right? Or something, runs. And she just misses Riley because no one in his midnight helicopter to Bolivia bothers to look at the ground during takeoff. Credits then roll. So, okay. In my opinion, there's nothing wrong with a character turning into a jerk. And I don't even object to a sudden character turn like Riley is on the vamp download. What I do object to, and I do so most violently, is that the show, and not just the characters, claim that this is all Buffy's fault. The show here is arguing that she is somehow responsible for Riley's feelings of inadequacy. This kind of thinking that women are somehow responsible for the fear and discomfort that certain men have when they're around them, that sort of thinking has kept us in chains for nearly all of human history. And there's never a moment throughout the rest of the series, not even when Riley returns to Buffy's embarrassment at her lowest point, when someone or anyone says, hey, you know, it was super fucked up how Riley was basically cheating on you and claimed it was your fault. And before you say, well, he wasn't really cheating on her, think about this. Can you imagine the show letting Riley employ a male vampire to suck him? No, of course you cannot. So you see what I'm saying. I'm so sorry to use what's recently become an overused term here, but I must. This effort by almost all the men in Buffy's life to convince her that it was her fault that Riley needed to get sucked on or had a sad or whatever was all her fault is gas fucking lighting, you guys. And it's never, ever acknowledged as such. Which perhaps I could forgive on the garden variety, whatever, you know, death of the week, CBS kind of show. But it's a remarkably insidious message hidden in this show, which was ostensibly presented to us as a saga about female empowerment. It's Brock Turner in a This Is What a Feminist Looks Like t-shirt. Do not normalize male culture's constant fight to make women feel like they should be less, to make men feel like more, the way this episode clearly argues we should. Vote this piece of shit episode into the no-nack, then let us never, ever, ever speak of it again.
Wow.
Should I go first?
Sure.
Yeah, there's no arguing with anything that you said. This episode is horrible. And the reason that I said I wanted to, that we were in a fight is because you made me have to watch it again. And I'd completely forgotten that this was how Riley exited the show. In fact, when it started, I was like, oh, is this the one where they're fucking all the time and vines grow over the house? I thought it was that one, which is also terrible. but yeah, for all the reasons that you said, it's horseshit. Like the idea that Buffy should have tried to be more needy for Riley's sake. Like if he wants someone who's a suck, he could have gone, no pun intended, he could have gone and found someone surely somewhere in Sunnydale who was like a damsel in distress that needed to be saved all the time. He didn't. So all of this is on him and he sucks and he didn't appreciate what he had when he had it. So fuck him. I mean, go get killed in Bolivia for all I care. and do, to also tie this in with another recent podcast effort of someone on this panel, go back and listen to the recent Mark and Zara Talk About Songs episode about Midnight Train to Georgia, which also covers some of these matters in a similar with a similar bent and reaching similar results. Sarah.
Well, OK, I'm going to quote a little bit from my Buffy Sober Second Thought rewatch about this episode, which is a few years old, but the sentiments basically remain the same. Riley has overstayed his welcome narratively by about half a season. I would like to believe the show also thinks it's best that Buffy doesn't get to the clearing in time because there is no resolving the central problem in that relationship, which is Riley. But at the same time, the show seems to believe Xander's take on the situation, which is that Buffy should take romantic advice from a guy who stopped being in puppy love with her all of 10 minutes ago and run after a dude who cheated on her because Cheaty McGraw loves her and Slayer scampy choosers. Or something. Shut up, Xander. This is my, you know, main issue with this episode is that because a, you know, human guy tells her that she, you know, it's this guy or nobody.
Yeah.
Basically, and that she shouldn't expect any better is really distressing. There's a lot of other things in this episode that I don't care for, including the endless Anya, like, downward curly cue into increasingly inexplicable spectrum behavior that was not how the character was presented when she first showed up and was not amusing. We also got a serving of the kind of uncomfortable, like, Briley fuckfest Geller O-face thing.
So
glad to be shut of. And then she gets together with Spike and it's so much worse. And they're doing it in the butt. The show used to air at 8:00. Hi. but yeah, like all of that stuff is pretty bad. There were moments in season 5 that were good, but you could, like, the center wasn't holding. And the show always had a problem with, like, addressing Buffy's, like, unique, that her extraordinary nature and the loneliness that that would naturally lead to, without making her self-pitying and annoying, and without sort of stumbling into this idea, which, given that the show was created by a guy, I don't, like, maybe that's inevitable. I don't think so. Or he should have asked someone else for their take on it. But this idea that it's on her to make other people feel comfortable with her extraordinary strength and also her, you know, fundamental solitude, because there is only one. I mean, there's Faith, but whatever, we won't get into it. So I'm not saying I could have done a better job. Like, it's a lot of primal stuff to untangle, but he never was very good at this stuff. And Marty in particular, I don't know. Riley actually wasn't my least favorite of Buffy's boyfriends. It wasn't his fault that the initiative storyline went tits up because Lindsay Krause decided she wanted to leave. But the way that this is done, like that, because Buffy is Zansplained about how she has to settle for a mortal who's going to cheat on her to like just show her that he has some power over her. And then that whole exchange where he's like, go ahead and hit me. Both the actors do a really good job with it, but it's like, don't start to go there, realize you can't, and leave the line in. Like, ugh, yeah, yeah. I mean, good presentation. It is infuriating on like macro issue levels and micro execution levels. And I'm not going to fight you, but yeah, I'm good. And like this kind of problematic episode, we have not seen the last of it on Forge. So good presentation and ugh, barf. Shut up, season 5.
You know, whenever I recall Buffy, I always forget that the initiative storyline existed. Like, I have to be actively reminded about it. Wasn't there, like, some monster called Adam or something in this theory?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I'd forgotten that Riley lasted into season 5, in fact.
Riley's such a charisma vacuum.
Yep.
It's amazing. Like, that he was
that guy. I don't know.
I don't know. The thing is, I like that actor. I like that guy.
I do like institutional starch, as you know.
But I didn't even dislike Riley that much. And I liked like his interplay with the other initiative guys in season 4 and stuff like that. So I don't fundamentally object to Riley, even though I do think, you know, when you have someone who's happy, you do have to get rid of him. But I do think, Sarah, you could have done a better job of getting rid of him than this show does. I think my cat could have done a better job. So, but also I wanted to say one more thing, and I'm sorry that I'm interrupting you, Dave, but since you guys were talking about like the shittiness of season 5, this is also the season that contains the body, which is in the canon. There were some real high points in the season in between Glory's endless monologues and Ben, who I now feel kinder towards Ben because Frank is so awesome on How to Get Away with Murder, but now we're getting way too meta. But, you know, there were some real lows in the season, but the first season episode, the one with Dracula in it, which I rewatched just since Riley had mentioned it, is really solid and really funny and really great and just really crackles. The body's great. So there were, it's not like they didn't have it in them in the room anymore. It's not like the actress didn't have it in them. This is definitely, I'd say, the biggest misstep this season. Sorry, Dave.
Oh, that's fine. First of all, you're all wrong about Riley. He sucks. I don't know what the hell you're going. Also, did somebody say Dracula? No.
Yay!
No. I kept mentioning him, Dave.
No. Okay, I totally lost my train of thought. So, in regards to this episode being in the no-knack, I understand what everybody is saying. Mansplaining bad, all that stuff bad. But here's the deal. I mean, if I just boil it, well, everybody said their piece and I agree with it. So I'm just going to say this. I don't think you discovered the worst episode of Buffy, but I think you may have discovered the most boring episode of Buffy. So if there was a known act for that, I would vote it in. But in a universe where amends still exists, I don't think I could in good conscience put this in the same level as that. Like, that has so many no knacky qualities that I look for, including atrocious accents and people really reaching beyond their abilities. And this one is just sort of a mess. And it's also at the same time extremely boring. So that is my nutshell dismissal of this as a no neck entry. So that is my vote. Tara Ariano, what say you?
Well, you're wrong about this episode. So from the sexual politics perspective that we've talked about at length, I'm going to say yes, this does belong in the no neck.
All right. And Sarah D. Bunting.
It's both boring and rage making. There are worse episodes of Buffy, and I look forward to those being submitted, but I feel that my own personal no-naxis that this is bad enough, and I want to punch Nicholas Brendon in the face.
Well,
yes,
don't we all?
It is in the no-nax.
I mean, that can't be the measurement, or, you know, everyone would be in, but I get it.
That said, we wish Nicholas Brendon the best, and we want him to recover from his issues.
Yes, indeed.
I've been waiting for this trouble.
Uh.
Slayer season 5 episode 10 Into the Woods. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great known act.
Oh god. Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for winner and loser of the week. Thankfully, Tara's going for a start.
Such a come down after that. Briefly, Darren Criss, winner of the week. He's been cast in the next season of American Crime Story, playing Andrew Cunanan, who killed Johnny Versace. I totally see it, and good job for him. I think he will do well. Sarah.
Oh, no.
The Good Fight. As previously mentioned, we all liked it, but the ratings were off of the Good Wife finale, 46%. Oof. I don't think that's necessarily indicative, but I feel like based on the commentary I'm reading that the All Access kind of in its inception may have been a misstep for CBS, given their customary traditional demographic perception wise. Would you guys agree?
Well, as someone who worked at a newspaper, albeit now, like nearly a decade ago, I can totally see the meeting where the Soda Fat White guy visualized those people from that one season of The Wire, all sitting like in a conference room. And they're like, oh, you know, we got to get them to the online. We got to get them to the online. How about we people like this? We'll make it. They'll just go to the online then. We got to get them to the online. And so, like, you know, when I told my husband, like, even like, oh, yeah, you know, this one, you have to do the dumb app. Well, of course, that's not what we're doing. But and he's like, oh, that's some guy. That's just some old fat white guy who doesn't even understand the internet. This is so stupid and so fucked, just like newspapers are. He's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this the problem is the distribution method. Like, I get the need to launch your online service with whatever you think is going to be your best bet to like make people seek it out. And so, you know, a Good Wife spinoff is one, the new Star Trek series is another, but is the average CBS viewer, even of these, you know, nerd shows, like going to be adding yet another service? Like, why not just work out a deal with Netflix, which people already understand how that works, rather than try to launch your own whole thing just to get $10 a month out of people? Like,
and a whole thing where there's nothing there.
Right.
It's like the menu is very small.
Well, yeah. Does it, like, can you cast to Chromecast or Amazon Fire or to a Blu-ray with the CBS All Access?
Anything that's got the CBS app is fine. Yeah.
Well, because I tried to do it like just with my Chromecast and it wasn't giving me, you know, the little rectangle that means that it works. And when I looked at like the Google Home thing, I couldn't find anything that said that CBS would work with it. And I also think that CBS's demographic wants to watch it on the TV. They don't want to watch it on a computer or an iPad unless they're like traveling or something or a phone. And so if that's not, I mean, we've talked before about how difficult it is to make ourselves watch Amazon Prime because you have to fire up the PlayStation or the Fire Stick or whatever instead of something else. And this is like, do we need, you know, so this is another thing. It's another barrier to getting to the show.
Right. This is the same thing that we say whenever we talk about an Amazon show, like you forget they exist because it's like a whole other thing you have to fire up in an inconvenient way.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, it's not the cost. Like, we're not a good gauge of that, but I think for most like civilians, it's not the cost. It's that it's the cost. And then you have to like, there's a separate device or a separate like, you know, lane that you have to signal and get in. And it's like, well, I guess I just won't bother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think everyone thinks it's going to go to Netflix or whatever eventually. So I'll just fucking wait then.
Yeah, and that Star Trek show, if it ever gets going,
exactly, is like, going
to be like Game of Thrones. It's just going to be instantly and largely torrented. Yeah. So the people that would actually that are in that demographic, like, they've already lost probably 20%.
Yeah, it's true.
Because they're like, well, I'm not going to pay $10 for one show, which is, you know, the value proposition CBS is giving them, because everything else is going to be like Blue Bloods, The Next Generation, you know, whatever.
Oh, MacGyver.
Yeah. Right. So, anyways.
Blue hairs.
Yeah. Speaking about blue hairs, you know what time it is? It's game time. All right, everybody. This is the ninth game time of the season. The season scores are Tara 4, Sarah 2, Value Guest 2. That means Tara can win the season today with a victory. All right, today we are playing Rhyming Reboots from Dan Cassino, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Dan writes, TV is always looking to reboot old shows, and what better way to do it than by incorporating a character from another program? In this game, a character or entity from one show is placed into another. The show is renamed to reflect the new character while still rhyming with the name of the original show.
Mm.
All right, so here's an example. Hawkeye, Trapper John, and Radar find themselves facing a worse enemy than the absurdity of war, the Deadites. The answer would be MASH versus the Evil Dead. The two shows in question being MASH versus the Evil Dead and MASH. And you add one to the other. So
got it.
There are 36 questions today, and we have tiebreakers if we need to. Remember, at each official score break before the end of the game, we will have the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. As far as the regular questions go, each question is worth 2 points. You can ask for a hint, in which I will give you the name of the first show involved and the correct answer. After that, 1 point. Some got shows... it. But not all characters show up more than once.
Okay.
All right. Any questions about where we are in Steel Meals or anything like that?
Exactly. My question, Dave. Thank you. I noticed that last week you guys agreed that last week would be the last Steel Meal, but Omar didn't use it. So does that mean that I get possibly his Steel Meal, or are we?
Omar did use it. He blew it. Didn't he?
Oh.
Didn't he use it at the end?
He did. Did he? Okay.
Yeah, he used it at the end without any possibility of that having any change in the outcome of
it. Yes, he did. But didn't I also get one?
Yes.
Yes.
So there is one Steel Mill, and it is Sarah's.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to play Rhyming Reboots?
Once you give us our order, yes, we are.
We will start with Tara.
Who's the fucking dude, Ariana?
What?
So it's Tara, Sarah, then Eve. Here we go. Even though you don't deserve it, here's your first question, Tara. Catherine Bach leaves Georgia for West Covina, California after running into an old summer camp crush. What's that show? Rhyming Reboots. Talk it out.
Well, okay, it's Dukes of Hazzard and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I don't understand how they would rhyme. Daisy Ex-Girlfriend!
remembers the conceit of the... quiz just in time.
Yep.
Dr. Benton, Race, Johnny, and Hajid are brought in as the new special advisors to a liberal dream president.
As the new special advisors to...
So talk it out. Let's hear them shows.
ER, and I actually don't...
Let me read that first part for you again. Dr. Benton, Race, Johnny, and Hajid are brought in as the newest special advisors to a liberal dream president.
Okay. So, but I don't know the second show, so asking for a hint is probably pointless. No, but I'm going to ask for a hint anyway.
All right.
Hint.
Your first show is The West Wing.
Oh, interesting.
Well, a show
first
is The West Wing.
The West Wing. I don't know. Sorry.
Second show, Dr. Benton, Race, Johnny. That's Johnny Quest. Your show, The Quest Wing.
Oh, of course.
Dick Whitman keeps his assumed identity when he moves from the Midwest to California where his seemingly mystical powers disrupt a group of professional surfers.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Damn it.
Can I have a hint?
John from Cincinnati.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah. I'm out. I got nothing here.
Anybody? Dick Whitman?
Well, I was waiting to see if Sarah was going to steel meal it.
For 1 point? No. So go ahead.
Don from Cincinnati.
Don from Cincinnati is the correct answer. All right, back to Tara. George Clooney finds out what things are like for the everyday workers at the hospital without them knowing who he is until the big reveal.
Okay. I don't know how to do it though. It's ER and undercover boss. Is it undercover boss?
Let me read the conceit
okay.
of the
all right,
thing.
All right.
The rhyme?
Yes.
What changes?
Yes.
It's a character name.
Okay. Got it.
Daisy ex-girlfriend?
Okay, yep. Undercover Ross.
Sorry to get upset, but God damn it. An unscrupulous reality show makes women compete to date someone that they are led to believe is the Flash.
They are led to believe is the Flash. An unscrupulous
reality
show.
Yes.
Reality show. An unscrupulous... I'm sorry, can you read the whole thing again?
Unscrupulous reality show makes women compete to date someone they are led to believe is the Flash.
Someone they are led to believe is the Flash. Oh, God.
Good hint.
Oh, geez, I actually covered this. Okay, it's Who Wants to Marry Barry?
Who Wants to Marry Barry? That's Who Wants to Marry Harry.
Thank you, Pinky.
With Barry...
Allen.
Allen, thank you. Dr. Forrester and TV's Frank are both potential fathers of a preteen girl, and the court orders them to raise her together.
Oh, okay. So it's My Two Dads is the show, and Dr. Frank and...
Dr. Forrester and TV's Frank.
That's Mystery Science Theater people, right? And oh God, this is a good game, but it's very hard. I don't know. I have nothing.
They're mad scientists, I believe. Those are my two mads.
Oh, okay.
Exposure to red kryptonite leaves Supergirl to adopt multiple identities, including a Vietnam vet and a 1950s housewife.
The United States of it's Kara. Okay.
Correct. For 2 points, that's the United States of Tara.
Yeah.
And Supergirl. So we'll allow that to. Yep. Fred Savage goes to look for Winnie in Glendale, California, where he's taken in by the Camden family.
Oh, God. This is Kevin from The Wonder Years going to see Cam Fam. Must be Kevin's Heaven or Seventh Kevin.
Seventh Kevin is the answer on the sheet, but I like both of those. An engineer on a deep space mining vessel is put into stasis for 3 million years. When he wakes up, his only companion is a diminutive character who won't stop talking about fishing and golf. This really depends on you knowing the first show.
Yeah, no shit. I feel like Picky has really got it in for me today. Can I get a hint, please?
All right. Your first show is Red Dwarf.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, now I'm done. I got nothing. Sorry.
Really? You can't guess it?
I've never watched Red Dwarf.
Yeah, but that's the part you have now.
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't know anything about
a diminutive character who won't stop talking about fishing and golf, who rhymes with something in Red Dwarf. That's Red Dwarf, my friends. Red Dwarf.
Oh,
God. Okay.
Camp director H. John Benjamin is rebuilt better, stronger, faster, but still full of vegetables. And I encourage you to talk out the shows for the benefit of people listening.
Camp director H. John Benjamin.
Yep. Is rebuilt stronger, better, faster, but still full of vegetables.
The $6 million can.
The $6 million can, correct.
That is awesome.
That is the Wet Hot American Summer TV show and the $6 million man.
Sure correct. Is.
Helen Hunt moves to Cleveland and finds love with the assistant director of personnel at department store Winfred Lauder.
What?
Helen Hunt moves to Cleveland and finds love with the assistant director of personnel at the department store Winfred Lauder.
Oh, I think I know what the second show is. And the first one is Mad About You, where her character was named something that wasn't Mabel.
Not a lot of shows that take place in Cleveland.
She doesn't know the show. Thanks. Okay. I guarantee.
All right.
She's never watched it.
Okay. I haven't either, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. Well, ask for a hint.
I could ask for a hint. Well, why not? May I have a hint, please?
The Drew Carey Show.
I don't know. I don't.
Mad About Drew. Mad About Drew. Hugo leaves the island but winds up in 1960s Milwaukee with Penny Marshall.
Okay. So Hugo Leaves the Island is a reference to Lost. And the 1950s thing is Laverne and Shirley. So how do I wedge the two together?
Some characters had more than one name on that show.
More than one name on Laverne and Shirley?
No.
More than one name on Lost. Hugo had more than one name. Hugo was the hefty guy with the curly hair, right?
Uh-huh.
No, that was for me, not for you. Hurley, Laverne and Hurley, I got one, you guys, I got one!
Well, Eve has two, Sarah has four, I have eight.
All right. Wow. All right, guys. All right, Eve, get three of these six mid-80s TV questions from Trick Pursuit correct, and you get an extra 2 points. What two consecutive weekdays did Batman first air on?
Wednesday and Thursday?
Hey. Oh.
What military college did Paladin once attend?
Military. Annapolis.
Military. Ooh. That's a good guess. West Point. What baseballer, you know, baseballer, has hosted Memory Game, Sale of the Century, and To Tell the Truth?
Joe DiMaggio?
Do you know Sarah?
Nope.
George Gargiulia?
Garagiola.
Joe Garagiola. Yeah.
George Garelli from... what U.S. city did Mork first land in?
Boulder.
Ooh, trick question. First landed in Milwaukee.
Of course.
What Southern soap saw Vicky leave her hubby for closet priest Hunt Weston? Wow.
I know this one.
Southern soap.
I don't know. Dallas?
No, Texas.
Huh.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can't get it, but let's do this last question. What 60 Minutes regular did Ed Bradley replace in October 1981?
I don't know.
Dan Rather. Uh-huh. All right, back to the game. It's Tara first, correct?
Yes.
It turns out that Josh can't be with Rebecca because he's really from a lost undersea civilization.
Mm-hmm. Chantis?
The Chan from Atlantis.
Okay.
That's the man from Atlantis. I think with a clue he would have got that one. Mm. Jason Lee finishes off his list and moves back with his traditional Korean immigrant parents in San Francisco. You know the show's there.
God damn it.
Jason Lee.
Yeah.
Can I have the rest of the clue again?
Jason Lee finishes off his list and moves back in with his traditional Korean immigrant parents in San Francisco. Talk it out.
Well, I believe that this is, my name is Earl, and fresh off the boat, but since I don't know Earl's last name, I don't know this. So,
well, how about that?
I don't know. Sure.
All American Girl is your first show.
Okay, so that is All American Earl.
Knockoff Transformers are going to save the world by hacking Evil Corp.
Mr. Gobot?
Mr. Robot and Challenge of the Gobots becomes Mr. Gobot. That's pretty good. Yeah. Luchador-inspired Batman villain is accidentally impregnated.
Hint.
Jane the Virgin.
I don't know what the other show is.
Take control of your womb. Bane the Virgin.
Oh.
Bane is a TV character?
Yeah, he's from Batman.
He was on the cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Magician / judge Stone finally gets out of his overnight job, but not soon enough to save his marriage to Paula Marshall's Allison. Now they have to move on with their lives while still dealing with their joint children. That's question 17.
The Spread Eagle. Well, I feel like the first show is Night Court, but I will take a hint.
Gary Unmarried.
Harry Unmarried.
Correct. Mark Lynn Baker's life before Balky as a high school student interning at a fashion magazine.
So, okay. I don't know the name of Mark Lynn Baker's character on Perfect Strangers. And then it's Jane. Oh shit, what's the name of that show? The Jane Demi Moore. Not Demi Moore, the curly haired lady.
Interesting peek into your mind. Yeah.
Sorry. No, it's actually not. Sorry. I thought if I said it out loud.
You want a hint? I'll give you the hint that you need. I'll try to suss out which one you guys are having trouble with. The other show is The Carrie Diaries.
Okay. Well, that was okay. So, The Larry Diary.
Correct. Mary Richards' boss steals a time machine and things get wibbly wobbly.
Dr. Lou?
Dr. Lou. Correct. Matthew Perry leaves his friends and gets a new start when he meets agency operative Lee Stetson in a train station. This one goes out to Linda Holmes.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yes. Huh.
One half of it does, anyways.
Okay.
I will give you that one half as a clue if you ask for a clue.
I'm sorry. Can you just read the clue?
Matthew Perry leaves his friends and gets a new start when he meets agency operative Lee Stetson in a train station.
I'm going to need the hint.
All right. Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Damn it. That was, I guess, wrong on which Linda Holmes joint that was. But this is Scarecrow and Mrs. Bing.
Sure is.
Correct. More than 100 years ago, London learned that that trained dolphins are like cows. Once they get a taste for human flesh, they become savage killers. Now, a historian has to help the police stop a copycat on the loose.
What? Oh, come on. Come on. May I have a hint, please? You can pick any part of it.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you Ripper Street.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So bad.
One thing it can be. There's only so many shows with a certain creature that I mentioned in it.
Poor Sarah.
More than 100 years ago, London learned that trained dolphins are like cows, etc., etc. Killers. Your hint, Ripper Street.
Sarah.
Flipper Street.
Ms. Van de Kamp moves off Wisteria Lane to pursue her real interest, using micro expressions to solve mysteries with Tim Roth. I think you probably know both those shows.
I do, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It's Desperate Housewives. Oh, Sarah.
Steel Mail.
Yep. Lie to Bree.
2 points.
Sarah.
Mulder needs help categorizing his files, so he hires a librarian with lots of supernatural experience.
Ah! This is for you, Sarah.
I think it is, but so he hires a librarian.
Oh, God damn it.
With lots of supernatural experience.
Sarah.
Fox Mulder.
Yeah.
I don't know which part goes where. Fox Mulder of the X-Files. And I mean, it sounds like, oh, Jesus. Thank you. The X-Giles.
Thank God. I would have gone on a plane.
I really was afraid I was going to be killed. Sorry, guys.
I was actually biting my hand.
All right. Keeping in mind, we're talking main entities or characters. Norm and Cliff are hurled across the galaxy where they try and get a drink from a whole bunch of Jim Henson creatures.
So
now, keep in mind, this one, the thing is like a character, I think, is the conceit here.
Okay.
You know, like Baltimore on the Wire.
Sure.
Right. So, you said they fly across the galaxy?
Yeah, I'll read that for you again. Norm and Cliff are hurled across the galaxy where they try to get a drink from a whole bunch of Jim Henson creatures.
Okay.
All right. So Jim Henson creatures, Muppets, Pigs in Space is where I go to with the space stuff. Norman Cliff are on Cheers. We're not talking about them.
This is one where you should ask for a hint, I bet.
Probably. Yeah, I think you're right. May I have a hint?
Your hint is Farscape.
Oh, so is it just Barscape?
It is indeed. All right.
This is very exciting. Eve is has 6 points. I have 10 points. Sarah has 11 points.
All right, Eve. Once again, you're in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. Here we go. Who's the well-to-do widow of test pilot Peter Peel?
I do not know.
Take a guess.
Benson.
Emma Peel.
Oh, shit.
What soap received 20,000 letters from appreciative fans when Ellie and Stu married?
One Life to Live?
Search for Tomorrow. What adventure show gave viewers 10 minutes to vote on the outcome of its episode of November 4th, 1986? Wow, I did not know that. Adventure show, I would say action show.
Okay, 86?
Yeah, 86.
A-Team.
Correct. What sitcom has a theme that proclaims we finally got a piece of the pie?
Yeah.
Shit, I feel like I should know this. I feel like I hear it, but I don't. Bosom Buddies?
Jeffersons.
Shit.
How many husbands had Maude gone through before marrying Walter?
Four?
Three. What Days of Our Lives character was known as the Pawn?
I even fucking watched Days of Our Lives. I don't know.
Roman Brady. All right. Now we're into our last third of the game. Are you ready, Tara?
Yes.
Selena Meyer now has to stop a war between the Kardashians and the Bajorans.
Veep Space Nine.
Oh.
Special investigator Jake Stiles gets a new partner, one who has a custom car and a gadget for every occasion, even shark attacks.
Custom gadget for every occasion, even shark attacks. Can I have the first part of the clue again?
Yeah. Special investigator Jake Stiles gets a new partner, one who has a custom car and a gadget for every occasion, even shark attack.
Hint.
All right. Jake and the Fat Man. Jake Styles of Jake and the Fat Man.
Jake and the Fat Man.
Got a new partner, so that Fat Man's out.
Yeah, got a new partner. Custom made gadget. Jake and the Fat Man.
You're going to hate yourself.
Yeah, I am. Close this down. But I can't get I can't get Kit to rhyme with any of these. Oh. Yes.
No.
Jake and the Batman?
Jake and the Batman.
Oh.
Boo. The director of S.H.I.E.L.D. has to hide out in North Carolina, where he plays lots of basketball with Chad Michael Murray.
Okay, so the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. There have been numerous directors of S.H.I.E.L.D., but we'll go with... So Chad Michael... Is that One Tree Hill? But so are we talking about like Coulson? Are we talking about Nick Fury? Can I get a hint, please?
One Tree Hill.
Tree Hill. Okay. Well, that was great. One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill.
Coulson. What was One Tree Bill?
Pardon?
One Tree Bill, like with a B.
You're close. One Tree Phil.
Fuck.
Phil. The pie maker goes into a coma for 6 years. When he wakes up, he now gets psychic visions when he touches the people he revives.
Can you repeat that, please?
The pie maker goes into a coma for 6 years. When he wakes up, he gets psychic visions when he touches the people he revives.
It's Pushing Daisy, but I don't know the other show. Help, please. Hint.
The Dead Zone. Pushing Daisies, The Dead Zone. Know any characters from those shows? If not, you're screwed.
Nope, I only know Johnny from the Dead Zone. I don't know the other guy's name.
The Ned Zone.
I kept wanting to say the Dead Scone, knowing that that's not anything. Or the Bread Zone. Thank you.
It's pretty good.
Yep.
The whole world gets a brief glimpse of what the world would be like if they don't address the racism and privilege in this show based on the Best Picture Oscar winning movie.
Oh.
The whole world gets a brief glimpse of what the world would be like if they don't address their racism and privilege in this show based on the Best Picture Oscar winning movie. I didn't know any of those shows.
This is Sarah, right?
Yeah.
I just went.
Yeah. She's not happy about it. One of them sounds like Crash, but I don't really know what the whole world... Oh, is it Crash Forward?
Yeah.
Good work,
Flash
Sarah.
Flash Forward and Crash. Crash Forward.
Nicely.
Tired of the abuse she gets from her family, the knit-cap daughter of a cartoon family moves in with a quirky yoga instructor. Tired of the abuse she gets from her family, the knit-cap daughter of a cartoon family moves in with a quirky yoga instructor.
All I can think of is Dharma and Greg, and I don't even think that's it. So can I get a hint, please?
Sure. Family Guy.
Oh, well, Christ, I don't know anything about that show. I'm cool.
All right.
Please, just...
Oh, you're on the right track. It was Dharma and Greg, and it's Dharma and Meg. Dharma and Meg.
Sure.
Tony Danza moves into the Arcola household as a housekeeper and sparks fly with Scott Baio.
Tony loves Chachi.
What better place for a vigilante to hide out than with Chicago police officer, I'm assuming, Mike Biggs, who gets real uncomfortable with all of the shirtless pull-ups. What better place for a vigilante to hide out than with police... Chicago police officer Mike Biggs, who gets real uncomfortable with all the shirtless pull-ups.
Hint.
Mike and Molly.
Vigilante?
Yeah, vigilante.
Mike and Molly. Vigilante.
Your answer will get to
I don't know.
Point.
Mike and Polly?
Mike and Ollie. That's Arrow. When Evangeline Lilly gets off the island, she opens a motor inn with her mother. Things don't go well.
So it's Lost and Evangeline Lilly, whatever her character name was, I'll figure that out later, and Bates Motel. And I can't remember what Evangeline Lilly's character name is, though. So,
well, yeah,
that's probably a problem.
I can give you a hint, but nothing's going to help you. So,
yeah, because I know both of the shows already.
Kate's Motel. Kate's Motel.
Shit. Okay.
William Shatner, the Shat, is too old to play a police sergeant. So let's bring in Richard Grieco.
TJ Booker.
Jesus.
TJ Hooker and Booker. That's TJ Booker. All right, Sarah. Jack Malone and Samantha Spade are best at solving missing person cases, but can they do it without the CEO of Adler Designs?
I don't know any of this.
Really? Hint? Oh, I thought you would know the one show. All right. Without a Trace. Without a Trace.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that was her name.
Can they do it without the CEO of Adler Designs?
Without a Grace?
That's good for a point. That's Will and Grace. Nope. And without a Trace. Would you believe that Agent 87 of Control is gorgeous? She's the one lady who knows how to take care of herself. Her hobby is murder. Would you believe that Agent 87 of Control is gorgeous? She's one lady who knows how to take care of herself. Her hobby is murder.
Can I get a hint, please?
Sure. Let's give you Heart to Heart.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, Heart to Fart. I got nothing.
And Crafts.
Well, I watched that, but that is Get Smart and Heart to Heart. That's Get Heart. All right, that was the end. Let's hear the scores.
Eve has 6. Sarah has 14. I have 16.
Oh, woo. All right. Shits and giggles time, guys. Tom Wopat. I'm going to give a steel mill for each of these. Tom Wopat dumps his brother and teams up with Scott Patterson, who comes down from Stars Hollow to Georgia for rip-roaring adventure.
Lukes of Hazzard.
Lukes of Hazzard is correct. Last one. Here we go. Anne Heche moves to Elmo, Alaska to find love and instead finds the patriarch of the Cartwright family. What's he doing up there? Deep cut on one of those. The deep cut. Tara, I think you covered this show.
Say it again.
Anne Heche moves to Elmo, Alaska to find love and instead finds the patriarch of the Cartwright family. What's he doing up there?
Ben in Trees?
Ben in Trees! That's impressive. That's Men in Trees and nice Bonanza stuck together. Well done, Tara.
Boy.
Yes.
For us, the board today.
Whoops, that's the wrong one. All right, congratulations, Tara.
Yay!
Tara! And I can't find your traditional theme music for your victory, so I guess this is it now. Congratulations, Tara, you win. All right, everybody, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We told some Big Little Lies about HBO's new school crime drama before we moved on to Eve's Tiny Triumph, a look at The Good Fight, First Time Flippers, and Homeland, before we investigated Buffy the Vampire Slayer's Into the Woods for the No Knack. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Rhyming Reboot Game Time and the season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
snotty remark about a kid listening to music too old for her,
Sarah D. Bunting,
good lead, bitch.
And Eve Beatty.
I just think it's important that all the nannies know each other.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
You've helped out a lot, but I have too.
Yes, I forgot about all the vigorous sitting around.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.